Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
From WNYC New York Public Radio, this is The Brian Lehrer Show. I'm Brian Lehrer. This is just one segment of our show, but every interview is available on demand at WNYC.org. This on-demand service is made possible by WNYC and its listeners, so please help support this free service by becoming a member at WNYC.org.
WNYC On Demand is supported by Open from American Express, presenting the interactive webcast event, Making a Name for Yourself. Kate and Andy Spade and Bobby Brown discuss their leap from business to brand. Created by Open from American Express. Registration at openforumonline.com.
I'm Errol Lewis of the New York Daily News, in for Brian Lehrer. Brooklyn's 10th Congressional District runs like a big arc through the city's largest borough, taking in a wide range of very different neighborhoods, including all or part of East New York, Bedford-Stuyvesant, Fort Greene-Clinton Hill, Brooklyn Heights, Flatlands, and Canarsie. The incumbent congressman, Adolphus Towns, has served 12 terms in office, that's nearly a quarter of a century, and wants voters to send him back to Washington for another 2 years. But Towns is being challenged in the Democratic primary this season by City Councilman Charles Barron and Assemblyman Roger Green. They say it's time for the incumbent to retire, and they're here to tell us why. Good morning, gentlemen.
Good morning.
Good morning, Errol. Good morning, Roger.
Good morning, Charles. How you doing?
All right.
Good.
First, let me make clear, we wanted to have a candidates debate this morning, but Congressman Towns was unable to attend. Now, you both have told me that he has skipped many community forums and debates inside the district as well. So has there been even one full debate so far?
No.
No, not at all. And see, and the people should reject him on that alone. That is disrespectful that he doesn't have enough decency to at least exchange views. The district and many residents in the district are new, and they're new parts of the district.
That's right.
So he should introduce himself to the people and talk about this great record he claims he has, which doesn't exist, and give the people a chance to question him on why, after nearly a quarter of a century, that our community looks the way it does.
I agree. I mean, I think it shows contempt for the democratic process itself and our core values. Whenever I've been challenged for re-election, I've always stood for debate, regardless of who my opponents were. I've never turned down any opportunities to have a honest critique about my performance in office. And I think it's a really, again, a disrespect to the voters that he has not shown his face for any of the debates. And we're now going into, I think it's 8. Is that correct, Charles?
That's right.
Yeah.
Well, we'll go ahead and we'll have a call-in section later on. This is going to last about a half an hour, and you never know who might call. It might even be the incumbent. The congressman cast a deciding vote on several key pieces of legislation that Democratic leaders in Congress had identified as priority. In fact, he was publicly chastised by the leader of the Democratic Congressional Conference, Nancy Pelosi. Can either of you tell us what those votes were about and what you would have done differently?
Well, one of the votes was obviously the vote on CAFTA.
The Central America Free Trade Agreement.
Central America Free Trade Agreement, which basically had no prescriptions for the rights of organized labor beyond our borders, particularly in developing nations where we see poor populations. And that bill, basically what it did, it created a depression in the labor market here, as well as the exploitation of workers throughout the globe. It also had no protections for environmental protections. And so I think that, you know, that it is one example. The other, quite honestly, is the bill that he voted for. No other Democrat in the city supported, which is a vote in support of the repeal of the estate tax. At a time when we're seeing withdrawal of resources for many services, such as public housing, and we need money within the Treasury to address the crisis of the working class and the poor, this bill provided a tax cut for the wealthiest 1% of the families in the country. He is the only Democrat in the city of New York who supported that. And then finally, the bill that he supported, which was weakening protections for working class and working poor families as related to bankruptcy. Bankruptcy provisions. That bill has had a devastating impact, and where it has hurt the most recently, is in New Orleans and the Gulf states, where many people, poor and working poor families, are now not able to apply for bankruptcy protection because of that bill.
So I take it then, Assemblyman, you would have voted the party line, you would have voted with the conference to try and block all three of those pieces.
Well, it's not just the party line. I think some of these things transcend party politics, and it's the right thing to do. I think they represent a moral imperative to protect working class and working poor families within our country.
Councilman?
He also was absent from a great budget initiative. We're to send about $40 billion to the inner cities for social programs to handle things like Section 8, Pell Grants, Medicaid, Medicare. This was $40 billion. And I might add, in both the free trade agreement vote, I voted fair trade, definitely against that, because free trade creates unemployment in America and exploits employment abroad. Both of those votes were so close that his absentee in one vote, which was the budget vote, and his vote for the free trade agreement made the difference. I think it was about 217 to 215. So his voting actually and his absentee from a vote made a difference. Yesterday in the city council, we had to pass a local law to protect us from Ed Towns and company on the bankruptcy. What they did with bankruptcy said, before you file bankruptcy now, you have to get credit counseling. And that's where people are getting ripped off. You're going to go bankrupt getting paying for the credit counseling. So they got these rip-off artists that fund people like Ed Towns and others that have these credit counseling services that are for-profit, and they convince people who are already in economic damage that you need credit counseling, and they sell you all kinds of goods and products and things, and by the time you get to filing bankruptcy, you're bankrupt dealing with these credit counselors. So we passed the law just yesterday in the city council. Jim Gennaro was the sponsor. I was one of the co-sponsors of that bill that would now say that you have to apply not-for-profits will be in the credit counseling bill business, and they have to be accredited. So therefore, you cannot get ripped off in New York City because of our law. We had to protect ourselves from Ed Towns.
Who would do the accrediting, by the way?
This would be not-for-profit organizations instead of the for-profit organizations, and then they would be listed on the city register so that we can tell the public this is a credible not-for-profit counseling services that won't cause you bankruptcy before you file bankruptcy.
Okay, then we'll leave that for another time.
One other issue, and I think was part of what we're dealing with is this increased polarization that exists with economic polarization that exists within our society, the growing gap between rich and poor. And I think one other example of this is that the incumbent voted for a bill that allowed drilling in the Alaskan preserves, wildlife
right.
preserves. And that bill gave a $100 billion pre-tax credit to corporations such as ExxonMobil. As a result of that, Chief Executive Officer of ExxonMobil retired with a retirement package of over $400 million, close to $400 million. Now, this occurs at the same time that families within our community are struggling to maintain their houses because of the increase in cost of home heating fuel. And so what you see is that the incumbent has morphed into a Republican.
Right.
Many of the core values of the Democratic Party, which calls for open and healthy competition, particularly within major corporations, to allow for real economic equality, have been eroded. These core values have been eroded, I think, because of the positions that the congressman has taken. And then what Charles said, H.R. 1515, that created a cut to Medicaid, Medicare. That hit seniors. There was a cut to child care and daycare services. The Children's Defense Fund issued a statement saying that Ed Towns did a disservice to poor children in his district and throughout the country for not showing up for that vote. And the congressman has one of the worst attendance records in Congress, one of the five worst attendance records in Congress. And we say that, you know, at the very least, if you can't show up for work, then, you know, you ought not represent your constituents.
I'm Errol Lewis of the New York Daily News, in for Brian Lehrer. We are talking about the upcoming Democratic primary in the 10th Congressional District in Brooklyn with two of the challengers, Assemblyman Roger Green and City Councilmember Charles Barron. It's easy in a way to talk about some of these broad issues like drilling in the Alaska wilderness, or fighting the good fight against members of the other party in Washington. But what are your plans for the district, which has high levels of crime and unemployment and includes one neighborhood, East New York, that turns up year after year as a place with the highest number of homicides in East New York?
Well, what we're trying to do right now, and we've been successful at doing, when the CSS came out with a study saying that nearly 50% of black males are unemployed, I didn't just complain about it. I went to the mayor, went to the speaker of the city council, and to date, we've secured $34 million for a workforce development program, and we have hired over hundreds of people right now. And now we're moving in a phase to have the unions get involved in this and get into apprenticeship programs that lead to placement. Because oftentimes in the unions, we got to make sure that we get some of those jobs and not just those family members. So we addressed it that way. The other thing is the infrastructure. For 24 years, our parks in East New York were messed up. The housing was far too expensive. We're resurfacing some of the roads. So we're building the infrastructure. I did secure $3.6 million to renovate Linden Park. It is the number one park in the city now. I secured $10 million from NYCHA to bring in a youth center that will be opening up next year, and another $4 million for Venable Park and $2 million for the Brownsville Recreation Center, Greg Jackson's park over there in Brownsville. So I think in a short span of time, in 4 years, I was able to do that. And then opening up colleges for my people in East New York, Brownsville, and other areas, I'm chair of the higher education, secured over $40 million worth of scholarships, and even had a $4.5 million program to offset some of the tuition increase. So I think these are the kinds of things that I have proposed, and we want to do community patrols because we think police are out of control in our community, and we don't care whether you're committing crimes in blue jeans or blue suits. We don't want nobody committing crimes. And I think if we have community patrols, increased jobs, opportunities, because every time crime goes up, they bring in police. Well, when unemployment goes up, bring in more jobs. So we're looking at building our infrastructure, and the biggest project that I have been involved in to date is a $1 billion project that's going to bring in gateway estates. And not only we way past the inclusionary zoning law that says you have to have 20% affordable housing, I'm working with Reverend Johnny Ray Youngblood, and we'll have close to 60 to 70% affordable housing, including 700 units of one-family homes for $158,000, and the income requirement is $35,000.
Okay.
I think that the moral imperative is education and economic self-reliance. What I've focused on in my district is the creation of schools that would work. I had the opportunity to write a proposal and legislation to create the Benjamin Banneker Academy, which now is defined as a national model for education. For the past 6 years, close to 100% of the students at Banneker have graduated going on to college. 98% of the student body population have passed the statewide Regents exam. And these students emanate from some of the poorest neighborhoods in Brooklyn, Farragut Houses, Fort Greene Houses, Lafayette Gardens. But it demonstrates that our children can succeed if they're placed in an appropriate environment with their strong teaching and instruction and supportive services for them, and also a commitment to encourage parents to create an educational ethic for our children. And so we created Banneker, and then at the same time incubated yet another school out of Banneker called the Bedford Academy, which just opened up on Monroe and Bedford Avenue. And that school has demonstrated that it is an example of educational excellence. This past year, 100% of the students at Bedford Academy secured passage of the statewide Regents exam in language arts and English, and that was done in the upper quartile. And I do think that some of these issues are inextricably linked to what's happening globally. The issue for us to a great extent is books, not bombs. When we see that we're expending something in the range of $400 billion per year in a war in Iraq that now has been discredited and our troops are now in the middle of a civil war, I think it's pretty clear that that money could best be served by expanding educational services for our children. Dr. King, I think it was in 1967 when he spoke out against the wars in Southeast Asia, he said that bombs dropped in Southeast Asia would inevitably explode in our urban centers.
Okay, hold that thought, Assemblyman. We are going to continue after a short break. I'm Errol Lewis of the Daily News in for Brian Lehrer, and we are going to take your calls as we talk with Assemblyman Roger Green and Councilmember Charles Barron, who are both running for the congressional seat in Brooklyn's 10th District. Give me a call at 212-433-9692. I'm Errol Lewis of the New York Daily News, in for Brian Lehrer. We are talking with Assemblyman Roger Green and Councilmember Charles Barron, both of whom are running against Ed Towns in the 10th Congressional District in Brooklyn. That's an area that includes every place from East New York down to Brooklyn Heights and back around through Flatlands and Canarsie. We're taking your calls for both of these candidates. If you want to join the conversation, call 212-433-9692. That's 433-WNYC. Let me ask you something, Councilman. When we talk about the very high crime rate in the district, and all over the TV this morning, there's this horrible shooting that happened yesterday on Hancock Street. Are you really able to go to bat to improve public safety, given your background and having done so much activism, calling for the police to either change their patrol patterns, leave the community, or otherwise sort of pull back in inner city communities?
Well, actually, we're not calling for them to pull back. We're calling for community policing, and absolutely, I was out there, and that's one of the reasons why I'm running for Congress, because when stuff happens, even in his district, they don't call for Ed Towns, they call for Charles Barron. I was the only one out there responding to that, responding to families in need at that time. Two young men were killed. The police discharged some bullets from his gun. We don't know whether he hit or whether the internal battle was the cause of the death, so we're still investigating. But families are in need of people like our leaders to support them. They have to get victim services, and they need people there. What I'm proposing is that we get to community policing. First, the state needs to pass some kind of residency law so police live in the city and understand the city and have a vested interest in the city. Secondly, I think there should be an independent agency created to prosecute police. It's difficult to get the DA to do it. The internal affairs is policing the police. And Civilian Complaint Review Board, the commissioner determines what happens with that, and that's once again policing the police. So if police knew that they would have to pay consequences before they engage in these kind of things, that I think that we would get more involved in community policing, get with the clergy, get with the business leaders in the community, the grassroots activists. I remember years ago when I grew up in Lillian Wall Public Housing, the police knew our family, they knew our family very well. So if you did something wrong, they'd call your mama or tell your daddy or, they'd do it like that. Now they'll cuss you out, they'll slap you around. That kind of policing is not helpful. Crime cannot be solved by policing. Policing will never. Police containment, when turning us into a foreign, like the foreign occupying force, will never contain crime. It has to be an economic answer to crime, job creation, entrepreneurial development, and opportunities for youth. Create night centers. I used to be able to go to a night center that stayed open for 12 at midnight.
Well, let me ask. But Councilman, let me ask this a different way. If I'm a police officer in, say, the 79th precinct, the 81st precinct, where this shooting took place yesterday,
right?
If I need to reach out to somebody to try and stop, I mean, this is automatic gunfire, semi-automatic weapons being fired on a public street at 4:30 in the afternoon. If I need to turn to somebody to try and figure out how to get that kind of dangerous street violence under control, why would I turn to a Councilman Charles Barron who is looking to set up some kind of apparatus to prosecute police?
Well, first of all, you don't have to turn to me. It's not about the individual police officer to turn to me. I think the commissioner should turn to me because I have ideas beyond prosecuting police. Oftentimes, the police are victimizing us, and there are times when we have community crime. I have ideas for community crime. Most of us know where it's happening. We know the people in the neighborhood. If they would engage us in a community policing program, reach out to a Charles Barron who knows the neighborhood, who knows the leadership, and let me introduce them to people. Let me show them how to confront our people. Don't call East New York an impact zone and bring in 100 scared white rookies from out of our city to police us. If you think our area has high crime rate and you want to police, bring in the experienced police officers, not the rookies that you just got out of school. You walk through East New York now, and I'm telling you right now, if I see these five white rookies standing on the corner on one side at midnight, and I see a bunch of brothers with hip-hop gab and garb and do-rags on the other corner, I'm going past the brothers because these rookies are scared to death, and I've seen it. I've seen them overreact to little things and had to intervene. So to me, that is not good police science. And when you see a crowd gathering, and I told the commanders in different precincts that when the crowds gather and you secure your prisoner or your crime area, disperse the police. Don't try to disperse the crowd. It starts riots.
Okay, thanks.
So they're not approaching policing correctly.
Thank you.
Well, I think we definitely have a problem. It's twofold. There is clear evidence that many of the police have not been trained correctly, and consequently, we see the behavior of both police brutality and also actually systemic racism within some of the police department. And so I think that part of what we need to do is to ensure that we train up a new generation of police officers who have a better understanding about the culture that exists within our communities. One of the things I propose is that we need to have resources to create schools that will enable children to be trained up into essential services such as the police and fire department within the city of New York. Those schools could be organized in a way where some of the credits that they would normally receive could be secured while they're in public school, and then they could transition into the essential services such as police and fire departments. Given the changing demographics of our city, it's once been said that demographics represent destiny. So if the destiny is to create a police department that looks more like the people in the city of New York, then I think we should start again with our public schools. The other thing I think is on a congressional level, one of the things that we need to address is the issue of gun violence and why it is that that we have a proliferation of guns within our community is in part because the Congress repealed legislation that would enable private citizens to sue gun companies and hold them strictly liable for the proliferation of guns within our communities. And I think that one of the things we need is national leadership, congressional leadership that would move in a different direction.
We have calls from our listeners. Mark from Sheepshead Bay, you're on the air. Good morning.
Hi, good morning.
Good morning.
Just as a basic premise, I think that the more you have a government that focuses on corruption and patronage, the less it does to meet the needs of the people in the district. Mm-hmm. And given that idea, I'd like to ask you, what is your relationship with Clarence Norman, who's now convicted and will be serving time, and the Kings County Democratic Organization that he led for a number of years?
Well, I supported all the reform judges that ran for office and actually introduced legislation that called for open primaries for judges. This is Assemblyman Roger Green speaking. And if elected to office, one of the things that I would support is creation of an independent ethics commission to investigate congressional misconduct. I do not hide from the fact that I myself had made a mistake a few years ago with respect to a travel voucher. It was unintended, but I do think that I and all other elected officials must be held to the highest standard of ethical conduct. And I do also believe that this is particularly important for African-American elected officials because many of our people are, our voters are, in fact, disillusioned by the political process, and for them to become active agents in our civil society, they must know that there's no corruption or government malfeasance. So, again, I would call for creation of an independent ethics commission to investigate congressional misconduct, and I also support the notion of publicly financed elections for members of Congress. I think that would take the pay-to-play culture out of the Congress as we see it today.
In a very direct answer to your question, I have Clarence has always opposed me when I run in this district. In my district, he's always been on the opposite side. Clarence Norman and I, we know each other, but I have no relationship on a political level. He's always opposed because I'm an outsider. I'm not involved in the Democratic Party. Most of the black Democrats don't support me, and I have to say this. When the first time I ran against Priscilla Wooten, Roger Green was the only black elected official that supported me. So I'm on the outs with the county. I think we need new leadership. I think there's too much corruption. It's not Clarence. It's a lot of corruption going on. There's a lot of patronage going on. There's a lot of people that don't want to engage in electoral politics anymore because it's hard to stay on the ballot. The county will get you knocked off because they got high-paid lawyers.
Okay, fair enough.
Judges. So I just think we need a sweeping change in
okay.
Brooklyn leadership.
Thank you. We have another call. Amelia from Fort Greene, you're on the air. Good morning.
Hi, good morning.
Good morning.
First, I just want to congratulate, I have a question for Charles Barron, and first I just want to congratulate him for standing up for peace and justice in Brooklyn. And the peace movement really appreciates his support.
Thank you.
But my question has to do with your invitation inviting Robert Mugabe to the city, and kind of relating in general to this kind of like moral relativism in regards to race. And Robert Mugabe is a killer. I mean, has done so much, not just against the blacks in the whites in his country, but against the blacks as well. And I'm just wondering why you would invite somebody like that into our city, and why would you would have any relationship with them.
Thank you for the call.
First of all, thank you for your support and kind words. But I'll guarantee you the only thing you know about Robert Mugabe is what you read through the West. I've visited Zimbabwe. And
Charles, you broke up a little bit.
Okay.
Just
can
repeat
you hear me
that?
Now?
Yeah, just repeat that, please.
I visited Zimbabwe, and I looked for facts. The fact of the matter that there are internal wars and conflicts in Zimbabwe like there are in countries all over the world. He's no exception. The reason why I support Robert Mugabe, because he was a liberator who liberated his country from European colonialism, and in 20 years, he is the only African leader after liberating his country, is giving the land back to his people, and that's why he's become a monster to America and England, because he doesn't support the willing seller, willing buyer land reform. He's taking the land back. Right now, 90% of the land in South Africa, even though Mandela was president and Mbeki is president now and they're making changes, 90% of the land is still in the hands of whites. Robert Mugabe showed the example of how you should get your land back, the basis of your freedom, and America and the Western press has defamed his character ever since.
Councilman, when either on your visits or from any other source, did you perceive any human rights problems or violations in Zimbabwe at all?
There's not a country in the world that's not engaged in human rights violations. And you can look at the reports internationally. America has human rights violations. So you will always be able to find human rights violations in any country in the world. What I'm saying to you, Errol, is it's blown out of proportion because they're against his land reform policies of giving the land back to Africans that were stolen by the whites.
Didn't a lot of the land go to his cronies? I thought that was the controversy.
No, it didn't. That's why y'all need to...
You still there? We may have lost him. Did you have a different position on Zimbabwe, Assemblyman?
Yeah, my position is that the movement for distributive justice is a correct movement. The problem is the process of democratization in Zimbabwe. Unlike Nelson Mandela, Mr. Mugabe is trying to hold on to power. And I think that in that context, it has created unnecessary polarization for a number of ethnic groups and tribes in Zimbabwe and created a real problems in that sense. And I think this is recognized even by the African Union. In my humble opinion, I think that we have two issues there that shouldn't be confused. One is, yes, there should be a move for distributive justice to ensure that there's land reform, but the process has to come through a democratic process that's transparent and that's above cronyism that enables all people within that society to secure the kind of a justice that they long deserve. With respect to Southern Africa, South Africa, I think they are now going through that process, though it is difficult because democracy is very difficult. The legislative process is difficult. And so you may have an idea about land reform that I think is solely needed in Southern Africa, but it has to be applied in a way that holds to the standards that Dr. King used to talk about, that an injustice anywhere is a threat to justice everywhere.
Okay, I think we are trying to get Councilman Barron back on the line. In the meantime, we've got Josh from Manhattan. You're on the air. Good morning.
Hi, good morning. Great show. I just want to say, just in a few words, I think that the picture that has been developed in terms of Congressman Towns is totally out of whack. He's brought so much money into the district, among them the Thurgood Marshall program, to the tune of a tremendous amount of money I believe even $1 billion of money into the district. Now I just lost the actual facts. But one thing is for sure, Charles Barron and Roger Green. Roger Green is very close to the disgraced Clarence Norman. And Charles Barron has been known as a former Black Panthers, frothy of the mouth, possibly anti-Semitic, very anti-white representative who doesn't represent me.
I'm frankly offended by his remarks, Josh. Josh, hold on just a second. You're calling from Manhattan. Do you live in Brooklyn? Do you live in the district?
Yes.
I see.
And I find him offensive. I find him extremely offensive. In terms of representing all the people of the district, whites and blacks, I find him extremely divisive, racist. And numerous occasions, he's been denounced by many mainstream groups for supporting a dictatorial Robert Mugabe regime that has expropriated tremendous amounts of land, evicted white farmers, banned the BBC, banned press freedom.
Josh, we don't want to go back over that, but
let me
bring some order here. We have Councilman Barron back on the line.
Guarantee Josh has never been to Zimbabwe, never read anything. He's just listening to the Western media. Those are false reports. I brought Robert Mugabe to City Hall so that people like Josh and others can come and raise them with him face to face. 90% of what they said about Robert Mugabe was false. The main reason why he's a villain now is because he's taken land back from those who, as a matter of fact, I even met with the white farmers in Zimbabwe.
Wait a minute, one quick thing
and I'll stop. For 20 years, the white farmers loved Robert Mugabe. It wasn't until the year 2000 that he decided to take the land back that he became a villain.
Do you think, Councilman, that your position on that and other issues, which are controversial positions, I don't think you deny that, may stand in the way of you being elected?
Absolutely not. People get to have an intelligent conversation and not an emotional one based upon Western media reports, which shouldn't be a research agency for you. People will understand that the work I've done throughout the community, a living wage benefits everybody, not just blacks. A predatory lending bill benefits everybody, not just blacks. When we say bring the troops home, white troops are dying in Iraq too, not just blacks. When we talk about economic development, that is for everybody. So I think that when you raise racism, some people are uncomfortable with dealing with race and uncomfortable with dealing with radical positions, so they automatically have a knee-jerk emotional response, not one intelligently based on research and facts.
Okay,
once
fair enough.
The facts, I'll get support. And I have, by the way, the Sierra Club supported me. Of the anti-Ratner groups.
Hold on. We're under a minute, Councilman. So we're gonna let me ask you a very traditional question for both of you. I'll start with Assemblyman Green. Which past or present congressman would you most model yourself after? Don't even give me the why. Just say who.
Well, for someone probably that folks haven't heard about, Congressman Robert Smalls, who was congressman during the Reconstruction period, who dedicated himself to the establishment of land-grant colleges.
Barron? Councilman Barron?
No doubt Congressman Adam Clayton Powell, because he was audacious, bold, and effective leader.
Thank you very much, both of you. We're going to leave it right there. Councilman Charles Barron, Assemblyman Roger Green, both running in the 10th Congressional District. Primary day is September 12th.
Thanks for listening to The Brian Lehrer Show from WNYC New York Public Radio. You can hear everything we do and check out our other programs on demand at WNYC.org or on iTunes. This on-demand service is made possible by WNYC and its listeners, so please help support this free service by becoming a member at WNYC.org. And thanks.